How many times have our patients returned to our office and are just stuck in the cycle of chronic inflammation? We throw everything we have at them, nothing changes, and even our dentists are frustrated. Rather than throwing our hands up and shrugging, we need to be turning to PerioTrace by PerioProtect. I have seen the evidence firsthand and have helped so many hygienists find this resource because it really works, which is why there are so many products on the market now trying to imitate them. The results are speaking for themselves, but rather than going with an unproven product, stick with the only periodontal medicine delivery system cleared by the FDA. And not only that, but their support team is seriously among the best I've ever encountered, from the education to implementation to support when there's the inevitable bumps on the road. They are there for you. If you want to get in contact with them to learn more about how you can treat your patients better, head over to perioprotect.com/RDH. And on that site, at the bottom is a contact form that you can fill out or simply email them directly to ask for help. This is one thing I truly believe should be in every dental practice. perioprotect.com/RDH to stop the cycle of chronic inflammation.
Okay, welcome back to Off the Cusp Podcast. I'm Michelle.
I'm Andrew.
Welcome back to episode 2. Hopefully you really, really enjoyed episode 1 and you could not wait for us to put out another one.
And hopefully you told all your friends that you loved it so much.
Tell all your friends. Tell even your family because it was really great to listen to. Anywho, so we're back with episode 2. We have a really awesome interview. We teased you with last time, Tricia O'Hare. What were kind of some of the fun things we talked about, Andrew?
Well, you know, Tricia does a lot of things in her life. I don't know how she crams so many things in. She's traveling, she's lecturing, international lecturing. We talked a lot about, she has a university. I know it's like a degree completion program to get your bachelor's degree in dental hygiene. So we talked about that a little bit, some of the really cool projects and stuff that they have done from previous classes. And we talked about myofunctional therapy, where you told some pretty interesting stories about your face. So that was cool. Trisha just, she has a really good, you know, she was lecturing, I think it was just this summer, and so she told a story about that. So some pretty good stuff that we talked about. But it feels like, just like all the other interviews that we've recorded already, though, we don't have enough time to really cover everything.
Seriously.
And, I mean, it'd be an 8-hour podcast if we touched every little thing that we wanted to talk about. She is so awesome.
Yeah, because when you start talking with people that are just enjoy the same things that you enjoy and have interesting information, I mean, you could just, it's like it snowballs. You go from one topic to the next topic and the next topic, and you just could go on for hours. We're going to have a problem with this, actually, I think.
I think so, too. They're just so personable,
problem.
You know. They're down-to-earth people, and I really like that.
I do, too.
So before we get to the interview, though, we have some adjustments and some additions that we're going to do for the program. As we kind of alluded to last time, it's a work in progress. And so one of the regular features that we're going to have on the podcast is a discussion about some current topics. And Michelle posted just the other day a topic about, there's about jobs and hours.
40-hour work weeks. Pretty much its topic. And I can put this on our Facebook page. It was said the 13 best jobs for people who don't want to work a lot.
And you were very happy about that. Oh, I'm sorry. You were very unhappy about that.
Just let that sit and soak in, because pretty much you're saying for people who don't want to work a lot, which you did point out to me, they're talking about not how hard you're working. It's just hours. But I think
hours,
this is a bunch of crap, because hygiene was definitely on there. Dental hygiene was number one.
Well, do you have the list up?
Can you
talk about something? Let's read them down. Might as well.
And honestly, what was funny when I posted this, all of my friends that do have these similar jobs were like, let's find this dude. And I was like, let's go burn his house down. No, I'm kidding. God, everybody's going to think I'm so mean. We're going to say that off the air, Andrew. No, I'm not kidding.
I'll be sure to edit that out.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, so number one was dental hygienist. Average hours typically worked were 31.49 This is what it said. What they do: clean teeth and examine oral areas, head and neck for signs of oral disease. May educate patients on oral hygiene, take and develop x-rays, or apply fluoride or sealants.
Hold on. Before you start going off on a tangent about the whole may thing, in our interview, which is totally random, we didn't try and pair these things up. There was a thing that Tricia was telling us about a student who did a project and asked the patients if they wanted education or not.
Yes.
So yes, actually that is true.
It can't be May. No, I just like this. I feel like it's not a, hers was more like scientific, like let's give it a try. Let's do some psychological behavioral modification. And these people are like, maybe if they do their job, they might educate you.
Right.
Maybe I'm just being jaded by these, because I keep seeing these things posted like, oh, here's a great job. You make a lot of money and you don't get a degree. I'm like, now apparently I don't work. I'm like, sorry, apparently my 6-year degree and breaking my spine working wasn't good enough. So also on here is occupational therapist, flight attendants.
I would love my wife to be a flight attendant, by the way.
Well, you get a companion pass.
Right? That's what I'm saying.
A buddy pass. So great. Yeah. Let me just say this on that topic then, because I was on a flight, because literally I've the last 2 weeks, I've probably taken 9 or 10 flights. And I live outside of the Atlanta airport recently, but I was on the flight and I literally had a moment where I was like, why do these flight attendants have to be such jerks sometimes? And then literally in the same thought, I was like, oh, I actually don't know how you didn't just smack that person. Like, so yes. I this is a double-edged sword. I see where they get a little snippy and I'm like, there was no need for that. Like you could have
babysitting adults.
Yeah, you know? Pretty much.
That's the hard part.
Yeah, and people are just, they're terrible flyers, and so I borderline on why do they have to be so mean / how do they not smack at least one person per flight? I don't. So I give them credit for that.
Like at the bank, they have that little bowl that has like peppermints or whatever in there, and you just take one.
Yeah.
When you're boarding a flight, they should have a little bowl of Xanax. You can just take one on your way through. Just welcome aboard. Enjoy.
If they pass marijuana in the U.S., they can just pump that through instead of oxygen.
There's no smoking in the lavatories or on board.
No disabling of the smoke detectors.
Right. It is a federal law.
Federal law.
Crime.
I probably could recite these things. Oh, but I can't because I put my headphones in and I don't listen.
How dare you?
I know. God, I'm going to get smacked by a flight attendant. Let's see. Librarians were on here. Writers and authors. Occupational therapists. So, okay, occupational therapy assistants was number 2, and now occupational therapist. Speech language pathologist. Recreational therapist. I don't even know what that is, actually. Oh, plan, direct, or coordinate medically approved recreation programs for patients in hospitals and nursing homes.
Okay. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that sounds like a cool job. Dietitians and nutritionists and psychologists. Oh, wait. Curators, post-secondary teachers, physical therapist. That was number 13. So I'm
why
insulted.
13?
I don't know.
Why? That's a weird number.
Yeah, so probably because.
That's all I could think of.
Yeah. He's like, baker's dozen. Here you go. I'm actually insulted twice on this because I'm a post-secondary teacher. I'm teaching in hygiene school, and I teach occasionally like a medical terminology class for technical college. So it's like a prerequisite to your anatomy and physiology class. And
so what that tells me, though, is that you work less than a regular hygienist then. It's like you're twice as lazy.
Yeah.
According to the list. That's what that tells me.
According to, and so my rant when I put it on Facebook, and I was like, this is such crap. Like, literally, apparently, I said last week, you dehydrate yourself because you can't find time to one, get the sip of water in the day, or two, go to the bathroom. And, you know, I have, you know, tendonitis in my wrist and my shoulders get shooting pains down the side of it. I guess all of that means my, like, I worked harder in 32 hours than I probably know of my friends that work 40 hours.
That's true. That's probably true.
Oh, it definitely, I guarantee you it's true. You want to know why? Because when I go to actually get a chance to look at my phone, I have 72 text messages because all my other friends are at a computer at a desk and they can just shoot off mass text messages at rapid rates. And yes. I'm like, do I need to look at any of these? Because I don't have time. I can't catch up.
Select all, delete.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I don't have time for you guys.
Do not disturb. So, yeah, I thought that was interesting. So if anybody comes across any other great works of art like this guy did, this was through Business Insider. I'll post it on our Facebook page so you can have the joy of reading how the best jobs for people who don't want to work a lot. Good job, Andrew.
Take that, Business Insider. We're going to get a scathing review from two hygienists that have one person listening to our audio podcast.
It'll come back. Don't you worry.
I'm sure. I'm sure it'll come back to just
because we're important.
It'll ruin our careers somehow.
We're important.
So the last podcast, I'm going to pretend like we didn't just record the last podcast earlier today, okay?
Oh, way to give it away, Andrew.
Last time we were talking, we were
which
talking
was last
about,
week.
Which, yeah, and last week's episode, I could have gotten away with it. Anyways, okay, so because we understand that there's going to be some hygiene students or some new grads, sometimes we don't realize that we say things that not everyone knows what they are. And also there's a lot of regional things that we need to consider. So one of those things was I said something about an isolite or an isodry. And I'm going to pretend like a listener contacted us and was like, hey, what is that weird equipment that you talked about? And I'm like, that's a very good question. Let me explain. So
yes, pretend listener.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because I want people to think that we're being heard, like we have an audience. Okay, so here's the thing. There's these isolites, isodries. Let me give a shout-out real quick to Mark Farias. So, Mark, I think, Michelle, do you know who Mark is? Have you met him or
I've only stalked y'all's round table.
Okay. That's Mark is a good friend of mine. He does a lot of really cool things. He does a lot of video content out there, and we've been on round tables and stuff together, but he does a lot of product reviews. He's an excellent source, someone that you can trust. He's very honest. He's a straight shooter. But he is a dental hygienist, too, so he has the ability to test these products in real clinical settings. And he actually wrote a blog post about the Isolite, the Dry Shield. There's one that's called Isolation with a Z, I-Z-O-L-A-T-I-O-N, and Mr. Thirsty. And basically these are all suction devices. But the cool thing about like the Isolite in particular is that there's a light that you can, there's a little light component that you can put it. It also retracts the tongue and the cheek. And it does it by like half mouth. So you can clean half mouth at a time. And there's a vacuum in it too. So you can just, instead of trying to have your little slow suction bent at five different angles, plus your mirror trying to retract the cheek or the tongue, and then getting your Cavitron in there and trying to get way down deep, and you know, then the tongue keeps pushing your mirror out of the way, and then you accidentally poke the patient. Mm-hmm. This controls everything, so you have a really, really good field of vision, and it's relatively dry, and you're not going to have a lot of aerosols and stuff like that because it's really doing a good job with the vacuum system. So I just want to kind of give it the listeners what it's kind of an expensive system, and there are a lot of different variations of it, but basically that's what I was talking about.
Do you Profijet and Cavitron?
I don't know what Profijet is. Is that the powder?
Baking soda spray.
Yeah, no, I've never used one of those. I've heard a lot about them. I've read a lot of them on the dental blogs and posts and things like that. But I never use a Profijet.
Oh my God, I live and breathe by a Cavitron Profigen. So I guess being in perio, my second office that I was in where I finished up, it was required, like you had a Cavitron every single patient. Not every patient did I do it like super thoroughly, you know, if they were a clean patient and had very little bleeding and whatnot. But for the most part, my perio patients were always just a hot mess. You know, you're always trying to maintain, get them back to a healthy state, whatever. But I live and breathe by that Profigen. So I have a, I retract with my suction. And that's how I don't drown my patient pretty much. And so it's kind of one of my favorite things to teach my students is, you know, retracting with your suction and how not to waterboard patients, because I love a Profigen, but it is very technique sensitive. It is. And a lot of my students won't even like, they do their minimum requirement and they're like, yep, no, I checked off on that. I don't need to use it anymore. I'm like, absolutely not. Get that crap out. We're doing
it. So tell me more about it. Okay. So what's the setup look like? And then why would you use that?
So the one that I had, I'm sure there's so many different ones out there, but I had a Cavitron Profigen combo. So literally it could be a Cavitron with the Cavitron tip. If I put the Profigen tip, it sprayed baking soda in addition to the water as a mix. So I liked it again, because I was perio. I had tons of root surface. A lot of people were on perio guard. A lot of people were smokers, and to get all the things I needed to get done in an hour and remove stain to that extent, I mean, it was just, it was impossible. At least I found it was impossible. And if there's one speck of stain, I am that person sitting in that chair trying to get that last little speck off, like to fatigue of my hands and craziness in my mind. Like, so the Profigen did it for me. And so I actually started Profigenting first. So I tend to polish first. Mm-hmm. And I know you had a round table on this one, but I polish first. But again, I had elderly patients and tons of junk all in their mouth and furcations. So it just was easier for me. So I Profigen first, and then I Cavitron and flush everything out at the same time. So they get a lot of water at the beginning of the appointment, but they got really used to it. So I didn't have much issue.
So what I've heard basically in the past is, yeah, the Profigen, and there's all sorts of, and so baking soda is one of them. There's that like glycerin powder.
Yeah.
And a bunch of other things that you can use, but it's mostly for getting into like nooks and crannies where larger instruments can't get in, mostly to remove stain, but also you can remove some biofilm. Is that?
Oh God, it takes, the biofilm's coming off. Definitely.
Okay.
I mean, it can almost be a little aggressive. Like if you don't have good technique with it, you're going to abrade some tissue and kill a tongue. And I remember being learned on in hygiene school and not my tongue feeling like sandpaper for a day. So yeah, it's definitely technique sensitive. And I think once you get the hang of it, it's pretty okay, but you can't use it on certain surfaces and certain compromised patients, of course, because it is an aerosol and it is an abrasive. And you know, your porcelain crowns, things like that, you know, you don't want anybody using it on new restorative work, because I just do not want restorative dentists coming ripping my head off. So you know, I use it on just really enamel, sometimes some old porcelain, depending if they really held a lot of stain, then I felt like I wasn't really doing much harm to it anyway.
And I feel like Mark said something about he used it on occlusal surfaces prior to sealant placements,
it's
stuff like that.
Yeah, because it's going to get into the nooks and crannies. It really is. So I'm a big fan of it. Big, big fan. Oh, and it gets calculus off, though. That was like the cool thing about it. It gets like that sheet calculus that literally you like sit and scale for hours on end. It gets that off. So super cool. I'm a big fan. But I see everybody's going to debate about that one. So
Well, I think that's kind of, you know, hygiene in general.
Yeah.
Everyone thinks that everything's perfect because it works really well for them, but it might not work really well for everyone.
Exactly.
So, well, should we get to the interviews portion of this?
And I definitely want to say, like, check out her 2016 speaking schedule. I would love to go to a lot of her courses, but I am actually at my own courses either exhibiting. Like February's insane. I'm actually presenting to the ICOI, which is International Congress of Implant Dentistry, and then nice. The Association of Dental Auxiliary Implant. Oh God, I don't know. ADIA. I always screw up the acronyms, but that's in Miami. I'll be there. If anybody's going to be there, come check me out at the booth. I'll be there. And then Chicago Perio meeting, I think, is in February. What else is it? I don't know. There's something else in February.
There are so many meetings out there.
Yes.
And hopefully we'll talk in a future episode about, you know, CE and things like that, because I love CE so much. I want to, really quick before we get to the other stuff that you were mentioning, one more plug for if anyone's out there that is looking to do a mission trip.
Yeah.
There's a very inexpensive with SomosAmigos.org. Make sure it's not .com. It's .org. And go on in January. Somos, S-O-M-O-S, Amigos, A-M-I-G-O-S, Somos Amigos is one word, .org. And again, Frank's looking for one hygienist specifically, possibly two, but one would be is what he's really looking for at this point. And it's very inexpensive, $300 plus your flight. So I've been there a couple times. Can't say enough about how great of an organization it is, how well it's run. And it's just they really need someone to clean teeth. Not to guilt all of our listeners into it, but if you don't go, dentists will be doing perio.
Yeah.
So
that was me throwing up in my mouth.
So
listeners.
Yeah. So there's that.
Another good thing that we could chat about later in another podcast is how often do you get kind of shamed for doing mission work in other countries? Ever?
Are you asking me right now?
I am. Yeah. Well, I'm just curious.
So many times where people were saying, well, there are so many people back home that need your help. Why don't you do it there too? And I talk about that in my lecture and kind of how to discuss that with somebody, because you know what? My short answer is I do that too. So, you know, don't give me crap about helping other people everywhere in the world. But you know what? The United States has we have so many resources, and these other people don't have the resources. They literally don't have it. So I feel like there's other people that aren't willing to travel internationally, and I am willing. So I'll do that and do whatever I want back home too.
Oh.
Is my short answer. But
that's
a whole
better.
Long diatribe about it.
Yeah, that's much better than mine, which is I do what I want. Get out of my face. No,
I'm kidding. Screw you.
I don't know why I have friends, honestly.
Yeah, I don't. Do you?
I pay them. Yeah. I clean their teeth, nice. And they stick around.
Awesome. Well, we know you do a good job, so that works. You profi jet them to death. So
exactly. I waterboard them, and I don't. And they still come back for more. So anyway, we'll talk about that. We can get into that one for a good podcast and. Maybe inform people who have probably said that to people. All right, then. So, again, check out Trisha O'Hare, and that is spelled O'Heir.
Mm-hmm.
If you are spelling challenged like myself, I Googled, and I was like, where is she? Can't find her. So she's there, and her speaking schedule is actually she works with a company called Liz Graham Presents. And so LizGrahamPresents.com has her speaking schedule. So definitely check out her 2016 schedule and you will enjoy this interview.
Welcome to the interview segment of the Off the Cusp podcast. This is an exciting episode that we have today for two reasons. One, this is our very, very first episode and we couldn't be happier about that. And number two, we have an amazing guest with us tonight. She's an icon in the industry, and for me personally, she's really helped me out in so many ways.
Mm-hmm. And I have just recently met her, and I will say that there have not been many people that I have met yet that feel like true mentors, but she is successful and respected in our profession and just super supportive. And so, Trisha O'Hare, I'd like to welcome you to the podcast. And I personally, and I'm sure Andrew would agree, that we just want to thank you for, you know, being a part of this profession and the progression, and such a great mentor to people like ourselves, and willing to chat and be supportive.
Thank you, Andrew and Michelle, for those kind words. And I'm quite excited to be part of your very first podcast. This is quite exciting. On the cutting edge.
Well, we're trying to be. But honestly, you are kind of on the cutting edge. You are actually a part of something I'm just now getting interested in, which is myofunctional therapy. Can you tell our audience, and actually me a little bit, because like I said, I'm just getting into it, but a little bit more about myofunctional therapy?
Sure. It's a fascinating topic, something I think all hygienists should learn about when they're in school, but it's just not part of the curriculum, sadly. And I studied it to have a backup plan, because I've been a hygienist 48 years, and if I went back to clinical, I don't think I could sit all day long in the chair. Myofunctional therapy was fascinating to me because it teaches people how to chew, swallow, and breathe, most importantly.
And
those are things that we are all involved with as hygienists, but we don't look at them because we quickly ask the patient, as soon as they sit in the chair, open wide. And we haven't really figured out if they breathe through their nose or their mouth yet. And if you can watch closely to see as the patient comes in from the reception area, are they breathing through their nose or their mouth? And I've taken both the Buteyko breathing and the myofunctional therapy, which really go together well. The Buteyko breathing really helps teach people how to close their mouth and breathe through their nose. And one of the most amazing facts I learned just studying the physiology of breathing is that you will get 18% more oxygen to your brain and your muscles if you breathe through your nose.
Wow.
If you breathe through your mouth, you're not getting it. So this has a huge impact on babies and children as they're developing, because if kids don't sleep with their mouth closed or during the day keep their mouth open, they're getting less oxygen to their brain and their brain isn't developing. And especially during sleep, if they don't sleep in a regenerative level of sleep, they don't grow.
So real quick, Tricia, let me jump in for a second. You said it was Buteyko. Can you spell that real quick for our listeners in case they want to write this down?
Yeah. It's a tricky word. It's a Russian name. Buteyko.
Oh, yeah. I would have never found that on Google.
It's a Russian physician, long dead now, but he noticed that people who were healthy breathed in a way that was invisible and silent, but that when people were sick, their breathing became very noisy and visible. So their shoulders were moving and they were gasping. And he did a lot of research and found that normal, healthy breathing should be silent and invisible, very deep but small. And the whole idea of taking a deep breath goes against the physiology of breathing, because you don't want to take a deep breath.
Yeah, you actually, your ribs and everything aren't supposed to expand like that sometimes. I've pulled ribs out from breathing too hard.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah.
But just moving your belly, but we've all been told to suck in your gut.
So we don't
even move our belly to move our diaphragm.
I'm going to blame that. I was trying to suck in my gut. Society made me suck in my gut, and I pulled a rib. Well, what I learned with myofunctional therapy, which is kind of a reason I learned it inadvertently trying to figure out some of my other TMJ issues, was it has something to do with acid reflux, because the tongue sometimes will not reach the soft palate and you're actually just pretty much gulping air, and that can affect the gut and the stomach. And I think that's what drew me in. And I think you're right when you say hygienists are the perfect people to follow through with this therapy, because we already know head and neck anatomy. We understand it.
Exactly. And we should just be looking at it more and asking a few more questions to help solve some of these mysteries for patients. So I'm excited that you found it for yourself, and you're going to learn how to fix things so that you have optimal breathing and optimal health. Something else we find with kids is if their tongue is down and they're breathing through their mouth, it's going to change how their face grows.
Ah.
They're going to have it's called long face syndrome. Their face grows long and narrow, but it also doesn't grow out. So that's where you get the high vaulted palate, the crowded teeth, and the tongue no longer fits in the roof of the mouth, so they know they can't get the tongue up, and that interferes with breathing and swallowing, and that then leads to sleep apnea.
So it all
starts when they're young and leads to different problems. Another big problem we've seen that dentistry has created is they've extracted four bicuspids on so many kids. And instead of growing the jaw, getting the tongue is actually an orthodontic appliance. When it's in the roof of the mouth,
right,
it's pressing, and every time you swallow 500 times a day, your tongue's rolling across the palate, and that triggers the stem cells and the DNA to grow to the right size. The tongue isn't up there. The cheeks press in and the face doesn't grow out. The sinuses become collapsed and the airway doesn't expand. So it becomes a very narrow airway and sets up all these kids who've had their bicuspids extracted for sleep apnea. And I have identical twin stepsons who had their bicuspids out and are sort of both end to end and big trouble. So it's been very interesting for me to see what I can learn to help. And I think what I found a lot studying this is I used it most for my family, the way, Michelle, you're going to be doing.
Yeah.
And Andrew, I think you'll find it interesting too with young children to see how they're growing and how they're breathing and are any of them tongue-tied. I found a grandson, a nephew's son, and my son-in-law were all tongue-tied after I studied this and got them treated and switched them from mouth-to-nose breathing.
And when you say tongue-tied, are you talking about the external tongue-tie or the internal tongue-tie?
Well, the lingual tongue-tie for the frenum, the ankyloglossia, essentially, which can be just a little ligament or more to the middle of the tongue. But there are also labial or facial ties as well from the lip ties,
right,
that can also be a problem.
And I also found that, which of course, I swear, I thank God I'm in this profession because I seriously have too many dental concerns, but I found that I have a under the tongue internal tongue tie. So that's why my tongue won't go all the way up to my soft palate.
Mm-hmm. So does the tip go up and not the middle?
Exactly.
There you go.
Yeah.
And as you stick your tongue out, you can tell that because it will pull the middle down.
Exactly.
And you can see. So those are simple things to look
right
for.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's interesting.
Sometimes I wish this was a video podcast. So I could say, Michelle, show us what you're talking about. Show the listeners what we're talking about.
Stick your tongue out for us, Michelle.
Well, you know, like when some people can curl their tongue, and I would, curl or do, I don't know, all the weird things that other people could do that I've never been able to do. And I remember being a child trying to mimic it and just being so sad that I couldn't do all those other things and stick my tongue out in weird ways. But, you know, all the things that a child problems. And then I grew up to have terrible acid reflux. I'm like, it's all connected. But like you're saying, it just once you learn one thing, it snowballs. And it all comes together and you're like, oh, duh. Why? How did we miss this for so many years? But we're asking the wrong questions sometimes, or we're getting a little pigeonholed or tunnel vision. And literally tunnel vision in this little hole that we work in all day long. We put our loops on and don't look outside of them sometimes.
And I think this is what can make clinical practice so exciting is if we become detectives and actually look at all of the different aspects that are making people are healthy or not, and be able to learn from the healthy patients and the patients who aren't so healthy. But clinical practice is fascinating and, to me, never boring.
No.
There are so many things we can do to help prevent disease.
So true. So if you have a patient that you suspect needs or benefits from myofunctional therapy, where do they go? There's a website, or you know, if you are a therapist, are you just send them to like a physical therapist, or how does that work?
The first thing to do is just make the person aware of what you're noticing, to see if they're even aware. Are they aware that they're mouth breathing? Are they aware that their tongue is down? Are they aware for young children that they're still sucking their thumb or fingers? Different issues. And then it'll be nice because you'll be the one who can provide the therapy if you're the one in the practice. But there are hygienists and speech pathologists who study this, and there is there are a couple of organizations that you can visit on the internet. I can give you those links to add to your podcast.
We can definitely put those in the show notes.
Mm-hmm, and they have listings of myofunctional therapists in different parts of the country. But I see this as a perfect opportunity, especially for hygienists who maybe don't want to spend as much time at the chair doing clinical dental hygiene, but still have the expertise and interest to work clinically with patients. And
well, I think this is a perfect opportunity to talk then about if a hygienist is ready to maybe transition out of the clinical setting or just being in the chair. They're going to have to be a little more educated, typically. And you have an incredible university, O'Hare University. And I got to say, personally, I'm a little frustrated that I just learned about it because I have a whole lot of student loans to pay right now. And I really wish I had known this, but you are making it easier for hygienists to receive a bachelor's degree. Tell us more about it because I cannot wait to scream from the rooftops about O'Hare.
Thank you, Michelle. It was studying myofunctional therapy that got me interested in looking at where we had problems with our hygiene education. I have a bachelor. I went to a university and got a certificate. Then I went back and went 4 more years to get the bachelor's degree. And in doing that, I took all master's degree courses. So when I wanted to get a master's degree, they said, you can't. You took all the master's degree courses to get your bachelor's degree. So then I had to apply and start a PhD program, which I did back in the 70s. And it was in instructional design, which was all computers, but that's when you had to memorize the programs. And it was like crazy, but then I moved. And then when I started, and I finished a master's eventually, but when I started working with speech pathologists and audiologists and people involved with myofunctional therapy, they just looked at me and said, oh, you're a hygienist. That's a 2-year program. You shouldn't even be doing these things. And I was furious because hygienists have much more knowledge of the head and neck and the mouth when so many speech pathologists are missing ankyloglossia and doing exercises for 4 years without ever snipping the tongue. And it's like, it made me furious. So I went back and
nobody
started
gets
looking.
Us.
No, I started looking at the curriculum because every hygienist knows that they actually did more clinical and more coursework to get that degree than anybody in getting an English degree. And so I laid out all of the courses in the state of Arizona for all of the community colleges, and I counted up the contact credit hours, how many hours they put into a course, and how many credits they received. And the community colleges can only grant 90 credits. That's the rule. So hygienists do 2 years of prerequisites and 3 years squashed into 2. And the hygienists from the community colleges in Arizona are graduating with 150 contact credit hours that they're not getting credit for. They'll give them 90 at the end.
Right.
Even though they put in 150, they'll say, well, that perio course, it's a 4-hour course. You go 4 hours during the week, but we're only going to give you 2 credits. Oh, and the other, you know, they just cut the credits that you still have to put the time in, but you don't get credit for the hours. And that just made me furious. It's educational malpractice. They should not be cheating.
What a great way to describe it.
So, and then when I look at all of the reason why we don't have more hygienists completing a bachelor's degree is your experience exactly, Michelle. It takes so long and it costs so much. So what people are requiring in the brick-and-mortar schools is another 30 to 40 credits on top of the 150 because they don't want to accept them all. They want you to do at least 30 to 40 in their institution to get that much money from you. And you know about the money.
The man. They always want our money.
And it's sad because hygienists have completed enough credits. Why not get the bachelor's degree quick and easy? We think it should be 6 months and less than $3,000 so that hygienists can then go on for a master's degree and spend their time and money getting a master's or a PhD. And when I looked at other field. Speech pathology is entry level, master's and now PhD. Physical therapy went from bachelor's to master's and now is PhD. And even audiology has moved from bachelor's, master's, and now is a PhD entry level. And we are still at a 2-year entry level. And that's because the Dental Association controls the accreditation of education for hygienists. And they have said, okay, Hygiene Association, put in any curriculum you want, just make sure that they can still have an entry level after an associate's degree. So that's why they keep pouring more and more content in, moving hygiene to essentially a master's degree program in the content when you think of how many hours, and teaching local anesthesia. That's something they don't teach dentists until a doctoral program, and you don't teach procedures like subgingival instrumentation and local anesthesia in a quote-unquote 2-year program. Mm-hmm. So those are all master's degree level procedures that we're cramming in.
Right.
And so hygienists, unfortunately, then feel as though they're just a 2-year grad and don't have the confidence that other professions have.
And they have so much more knowledge than they even realize they have.
Mm-hmm. And don't use it then.
Exactly.
Either.
And then they get into a practice where they're fighting the dentist to even get an hour-long appointment time and mm-hmm. try to explain to them about perio. They just don't get it. So this is incredible.
And now there's a bigger problem, too, because there are so many more community colleges where, and so many of the dental schools now don't have hygiene programs. So the dentists don't learn who hygienists are. And the hygienists don't learn who the dentists are. So they keep talking about wanting to interact with professions outside of our own. We don't even communicate
with our own.
This
is an excellent point. It really is. This is a great point. And
so that's how it all started.
Yeah.
And that's how we decided with Tim Ives, who is a hygienist in the UK Royal Air Force, trained in a hygiene program but was in the Royal Air Force and did hygiene all over the world. And Sarah Cottingham is in Phoenix as well, and she did a lot of perioscopy and practice management and now owns her own company, a consulting company, and helps hygienists and dentists maximize their potential. So she has the business background. Tim has a big background in minimally invasive approaches, and I have my commitment to prevention. So the three of us put our heads together and came up with this program.
And we are so glad you did. And I know you can't see me, but when you told me it was 6 months and $3,000, like, I literally did a palm to forehead slap. Because I'm pretty sure that's only like half of one semester of my bachelor's degree.
And my question to you is, did that, all of that coursework that you had to do, make you a better clinician?
No, not clinician. Definitely not.
And that's what a bachelor should be, is to help be a clinician.
No, my bachelor's degree, I do feel like, was busy work. I just did a lot of, because it's in health science, but my master's degree, I will say I got a master's of dental hygiene education, and I was learning how to put the curriculum together and then going to my teaching where I teach and actually using those new skills that I was learning. And my research, I actually was able to do and publish. So I feel like my master's got me a lot more, my bachelor's, though, I just felt like I was doing busy work, and I hated that part, so.
I've heard that from so many hygienists, and many of them taking courses they've already taken before.
Exactly.
So, Tricia, as I talked to a lot of your graduates, which you have so many awesome ones. They always talk about a research project that they're required to do. Well, can you tell me more about the research project through the university?
Perfect question. Dental hygiene, in order to be a profession, has to have its own unique body of research. And hygienists have, for many years, borrowed from periodontists and cariologists and haven't done our own research. So we want each of our students to do a research project within their clinical practice and implement some small change and monitor all the steps of that to see if they can actually improve the oral health of their patients. Our degree is a Bachelor of Science in Oral Health Promotion, So our goal is to promote oral health. And our students find out through reflection and inquiry that their patients aren't as healthy as they thought they were. And they keep telling them the same things they've been taught over and over in school, brush, floss, and fluoride.
Brush and floss, brush and floss.
And it's really clear from the research that those things don't work. And so when they realize that, going through a few reflective exercises, then they come with a burning question of something they really want to change. And it's not something they come into the program with, but through reflection and inquiry, they begin to realize they have a passion for something and try to figure out how they can improve what they're doing and actually make a change with their patients. So some of them do a project as simple as, what if I introduce an interdental cleaner, like a tepe, instead of brush and floss, because they have such a hard time letting go of that.
Speaking my language now.
But just making that kind of a transition is difficult for many clinicians who really are brainwashed to believe that everything has to be a brush and floss. And so then they monitor how they also learn motivational interviewing and behavior change approaches. And so they try some of these new behavior change approaches with patients, interacting with the patients to see, first of all, do the patients want to change? Are they interested in something? And strangely enough, they've never asked their patients these questions. They just give a lecture.
Well, you can tell me if you agree or don't agree with this, especially being an educator. I feel like sometimes when I'm teaching my students, I get them. Like they are excited, and then they graduate, and they get into the mainstream of, I have to find a job, I have to compete with people, I have to worry about all these things, and then they get into an office, and it's not maybe the ideal office because they just took a job that they could find. And it's almost like it stifled their creativity. It stifled their joy of what they were learning, and then it all of a sudden it just becomes a routine, and they don't get excited about anything anymore. Now they're fighting with the assistant about instruments and the sink and whatever it is, and they lose the reason that they were in hygiene school, which is patient care. And so I think something like a simple, I don't want to say simple because a research project is a big deal, but in the same sense, it is a simple thing just to get you excited and start going, the wheels turning essentially again.
And the students have said to us that they think what they have learned most through O'Hare University is that they've learned how to think differently to get different results. And many of them were never allowed to think in school because many educators have a philosophy of teaching the status quo. I will teach you exactly what I know how to do, but don't question me. And you do it the way I do it, and there's never room for growth within that type of a philosophy. But we want to teach our students inquiry and questioning and figuring out, what can I do to test out this idea? If I think this is going to work better, how can I test that? So with this action research project, they go through all of the steps, but action research looks not just at the outcome with the patient, but what does the student change themselves? That is part of action research, looking at both ends of that equation and not trying to be unbiased, because you are biased. So measure your bias and measure what you're doing to change the patient. So it's interesting because within action research, they change the process as they go along because they'll run into a dead end and find out that didn't work. Okay, let's try something else. But with the true scientific research, you have to keep going down that straight path and answer that one question by continually, you know, will an interdental aid work better than something else? Mm-hmm. But you don't take into account the patient's willingness to change and how can you work with the patient to figure out what will be best for them. And those are the kinds of things that make it so rewarding and so much more interesting to be a clinician, when you actually have a conversation with your patients and find out what they want. And one student did her project simply asking the patients if they wanted oral hygiene instructions. And she was astounded to find out that the majority said no, they didn't, and the rest said only if you want to do it. But we still keep giving people lectures when, in fact, just asking if they want it or not will change.
Oh, yeah. I've done that. I have done that.
Well, you know, I was just working with a doctor I've never worked with before, and we have certain protocols that we try and follow within our company, within the guidelines. And a lot of it has to do with compliance. And if a patient is compliant, then we'll give them more and more and more. So if they are doing the things at home to get healthier, it doesn't have to be perfectly healthy, but to get healthier and be on the right track, then we start talking about, you know, bridges and implants and major restorative work. And the doctor said to me, when we were going to kind of break this protocol, he said, Andrew, you know, I know we're going to do this, but you have to understand that, you know, we're treating patients, not robots. And just the fact that he, you know, to echo what you two were both saying, is a lot of us have lost that ability to have to critically think about things and understand that it's okay to learn and to progress and, you know, to maybe think outside the box just a little bit. You know, don't make waves or you're going to get fired, but, you know, just use your brain. It's okay. It's okay to be smart.
It's okay. It's okay to think.
And it's okay to ask questions, especially open-ended questions, and especially questions that we don't know the answer to, because we always like to ask the questions that we already know the answer to, like, are you flossing? Well, we know they're not. Why do we ask? Why do we ask something else that we don't know the answer to? Like, tell me what you're doing to clean between your teeth.
Right.
So changing it just that little bit, open-ended and not preconceived notion of the answer makes for a conversation, not a lecture.
I would always say things like, especially for a perio patient who is just not showing any effort at all, and I would just kind of do it kind of leisurely, like, hey, I just went to this really cool meeting and I learned some stuff, and I know you don't like me to explain these things to you, but when you're ready, let me know, because I'd love to show you all these things that I just learned. And they would always look at me like, well, what is it? I'm like, haha, now I got you. Now we're going to talk.
But that's a different way. That's exactly what you want to be able to do with the patient, to actually have a conversation.
Absolutely. I have kind of a controversial question, though, about school. There's been some talk about not allowing hygiene school to be an associate's degree and only requiring it as a bachelor's degree. Do you have a side that you kind of take on that, or do you say to each their own, like nursing?
No. I think that if we want to move the profession forward, we should recognize that hygienists have already earned a bachelor's degree, and it should be granted. And that's why we wanted to create a model so that could be done quickly and easily. And every hygiene program should be creating a connection with a university where they could do that. Unfortunately, the brick-and-mortar universities are into making money. Universities by themselves are huge money-making endeavors,
yeah.
And so that's a problem. But I would love to see our hygiene association doing more to promote the bachelor degree entry level.
Yes, I am a big fan. I'm a graduate of an associate's degree program. I thought I got a great education. However, after being in the practice for a good decade, I think I look at what my students know when they graduate, and I just shake my head like, oh my God, I hope they continue their education, or I hope they keep going to CEs, because that particular person struggled in this, and if we just had more time, we could have really figured it out and got them on point with it. So I do hope that it goes to a bachelor's degree, but I know it's kind of a controversial topic.
I can't see where the controversy would be, because we're doing ourselves a disservice, shooting ourselves in the foot by completing the equivalent of a bachelor's degree but not granting it. And I think figuring out how to actually transition these community college programs, associate programs, even some, many were in universities. Mine was, and it was like crazy. Why did that happen? I also have a problem with the accreditation standards for dental hygiene programs because it's so focused on competencies that you have to teach all of these steps to do things, but nobody ever looks at whether or not they get the patient healthy. Our school is totally focused on outcomes, not on competencies. If you can get them healthy, you can do it any way you want. But if you teach people just the steps and they never know how to put it together and actually get anybody healthy, what good has that been?
We could be here all night long, you and I, talking about this because I have so many thoughts. But I don't want to focus just on your the schooling part of it because you actually are an international speaker and you give CEs and you travel and it's not for everyone. I think some hygienists would like to just be at home and have their families, but Andrew and I both are like so jealous of your travels and what you have accomplished. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you are doing internationally for the hygiene profession and just dental profession, honestly?
Well, thanks. It's a fun aspect of my career that I love, and I love traveling. I don't mind it, and many hygienists don't like that part, would prefer to stay home, but they do other very valuable things raising a family. It all started for me when I finished college, got my hygiene degree, and everyone around me was getting married, and I had hardly had a date because my dad was the chief of police. So I was not about to get married to the next guy I had a date with. So I found that I could take off and go to Switzerland. And if I went for 1 year, they'd pay my way over. If I stayed two, they'd pay my way back. And each year after that, a round trip ticket. So I just learned to ski living in Minnesota. So I went to Switzerland and actually stayed for 4 years and had a wonderful time, learned to speak German, learned how to be a hygienist, and worked with periodontists who laid flaps and came and called me in to say, you missed here, here, and here. Yeah. Only later did I figure out that periodontists were missing here, here, and here. But I did learn a great deal, and it was a challenge to just live in a foreign country, be in an international community, and I've made so many friends at that time that I still have. And from that, I also became involved with the International Federation for Dental Hygienists, which is a wonderful organization that has meetings every couple of years. The next meeting is in June in Basel, Switzerland. So I'm excited to be going to that meeting. I've spoken at that meeting many times and been in touch that way with the international community. I also have a hygienist friend of mine who worked in Switzerland who is in Australia. So I've been to Australia many times as well to visit the school she teaches at and to speak to the hygiene associations. Wow. And been to speaking in different places in South Africa to a big dental meetings in several cities. And then knowing periodontists, I wrote perio reports for 26 years and got to know many of the periodontists around the world doing research. So I've kept in touch with him and so been invited to speak at the Italian Perio Society meeting. So it's just networking and following your passion and adding on in some of those fun trips to stop in and see friends in Switzerland, which is always feels like my hometown. So I like to get back there and visit friends and do fun things.
Man, can I borrow your friends in these fun places?
Yes, I got friends all over. It's really exciting. And just got back from Hungary where I spoke to the European dental educators, teaching them how to ask open-ended questions of both patients and dental students so that you find out what does the dental student want to learn during this clinic session.
Very cool.
So it's fun to share these things with other dental and dental hygiene professionals around the world. It's really a small community.
That's awesome. How did you get selected to be a speaker, though? Because I know there's so many people trying to transition or just have an interest, and they have no idea how to get started.
And I had absolutely no interest in it because I am not a public speaker, and I'm very shy.
Oh, but you're so great at it, though. But
it's taken me many years.
Your passion for it shows through. Yes. It does.
Mm-hmm. And so writing articles in the beginning, sharing information that I was the most passionate about with small groups and study clubs, and it just sort of grew from there. And that sort of happened.
I think so that's a great recommendation, is to take something that you love, because honestly, when you have a passion for something, you could talk in front of a million people because you love it. So find
exactly.
something that you love and just roll with it.
And my original passion for speaking was about a lot about perio, but also dry toothbrushing, and ended up evolving into the Toothpaste Secret cartoon book. And just teaching patients to brush the inside of the bottom teeth first without toothpaste can make such a huge difference. And that topic, I even went outside of the dental community to the Lions Club and the different community groups than when they were looking for a speaker. So it doesn't, you don't have to be a speaker just to other hygienists. You can speak to other local groups that are interested. And many times those people are listening more intently than they are when they're in a dental chair. So they pay a lot of attention.
So I know Andrew and I would just speak forever with you, but we do want to kind of wrap it up. But we want to wrap it up with some fun questions for you, not dental related. So out of all the places that you have traveled, what's your favorite place to travel?
My favorite place is wherever I'm going next that's new, that I haven't been to.
Ah, so. That's a great answer. Where you haven't been is probably your favorite.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
I love it. I love your desire to see what's out there.
New places.
Yeah.
I've never been to South America, so I'd love to go do some work down there sometime. That's on my list.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Brazil, Argentina, someplace down there.
And so, Tricia, I have one for you. Earlier you were mentioning about dry toothbrushing. So are you a Crest person or a Colgate person or none of the above?
Actually, none of the above. What I tell people is you don't need toothpaste, which Crest and Colgate don't want to hear.
No.
But you don't need toothpaste, and you need to get the plaque off first. And so I teach people how to feel with their tongue. To feel the plaque.
Ah, the tongue test. I've always taught patients that.
And it works so well, doesn't it, Michelle?
It really does. I do it to myself.
Mm-hmm. Especially today. It's late, so we all feel some plaque on our teeth. So if we could brush with a brush until it all was gone, we'd know that we'd done a good job. And what I really want hygienists to do is pick a toothpaste that they want the patient to use. Don't just give out samples because they're there. Because the patient sees that as a 100% endorsement of that product.
Yeah, you're loyal to that particular.
Right, and you have to decide which ingredients you want the patient to have and what problems you want to solve. So pick your toothpaste carefully, whatever you recommend.
Excellent.
And whatever you use yourself.
I make my own toothpaste because I'm a hippie.
Oh, you're too young to be a hippie.
Yes. I know. I think I was a hippie in another life, and it's starting to shine through.
Well, good for you. There's a really fun book for kids about the toothpaste millionaire, how these kids created a toothpaste factory and made a lot of money because it was so simple to make toothpaste.
If I have one question. So are you an animal lover?
No.
No?
I grew up in a family of 7 kids. We didn't have any room for animals. We were the only animals in the house. So. I didn't get used to it. I had, when I lived in Switzerland, I had 2 little turtles, and I did at one time have a seahorse. My mother actually ordered it for Christmas, but we lived in Duluth, Minnesota, and it arrived in a little plastic bag, frozen solid. So she called the company and said, you do have to insulate it a little more. So they sent another seahorse that I had for a long time.
Seahorse.
So I like those kind of little pets that I don't have to touch.
and probably a lot of maintenance is not required for a seahorse.
Yes, with all the travel I do, I don't have any pets or plants.
I guess not,
It doesn't work.
That makes sense. That makes sense. And so, Tricia, as we're wrapping it up, if we can maybe get some contact information from you, if one of our listeners was to reach out to you, What would be the best way for them to reach out to you?
Probably right through the O'Hare University website. ohu-edu.com is the website. ohu-edu.com.
Yeah. And there's a link on there to your an email address to contact us page.
Or Trisha, T-R-I-S-H-A, at ohareuniversity.com. But then you have to know how to spell my last name.
Yes, I was about to say. Spell your last name for our listeners.
O-H-E-H-I-R. So Trisha with an S, T-R-I-S-H-A, O-H-E-H-I-R, at ohareuniversity.com. Or just Trisha at ohareuniversity.com.
And we'll put that on our Facebook page and our show notes as well.
Perfect. This has been so much fun. Absolutely. I really had a great time. You guys are so much fun to talk to.
Well,
thanks, Rich. Is there anything that you wanted to promote real quick before we end the call with you?
I want to promote that hygienists are prevention experts. We spend so much time removing calculus, but the real value of hygienists is what they can do to help people prevent disease. So I'm not too keen on the therapist approach where they want to fill teeth. All we need to do is back up a little, and we will prevent the very first cavity.
Amen, sister. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. And again, thank you so much for being a mentor to so many people and caring about our profession and wanting to see it progress and helping so many get to maybe hopefully where you are one day.
I hope so, too. And you're so welcome. It's been my pleasure.
Well, great. Thank you.
And thank you so much for taking the time. Have a good night.
Thank you.